Carly.
And this is Sorry I'm on Break, a Hope and Jones Media production.
Hey everybody, welcome to Sorry I'm on Break. I'm Lena.
I'm Carly.
And welcome to episode 5.
Welcome back, y'all.
Yes, we hope you've had a delightful week. Last week we talked about Don't Look Up and how the intersection of the pandemic and social media have impacted our societal, just collective sense of humanity in a lot of different ways. And this week we're going to take that conversation a bit further by talking about the art of empathy as it relates to public service industries. This conversation was inspired by a 2016 book that Carly and I recently read called The Details in Retail, written and published by Markeisha Tatum. And Carly's going to tell you a little bit about it.
Yes, The Details in Retail. It's an anthology of short stories that's intended to be used as a training guide for navigating unfamiliar spaces for folks in the sales industry. So Lena and I were reading this book and we were studying kind of the evolution of working conditions in the service industry. And a concept that the author, Markeisha Tatum, wrote about made us pause. Tatum wrote, "The entitled shopper is exhausting because she doesn't hear the word no. It's not available or it's on hold. Somewhere along the way, someone did not teach this person the art of empathy." So today we're going to explore the current state of the art of empathy with a special guest, drumroll please, Marina Domingo Young. Hey!
Hello!
Welcome!
Thank you for having me.
Yes, give it up.
So, in addition to being my soulmate and best friend and best roommate ever and a frister who's been welcomed into the fold of the fam, Marina also has hella experience in the service industry. How many years have you worked in service industry and what are some of the different roles that you've had?
Well, I started working in a candy store at the wee age of 17. It was awesome. And then that traversed into a coffee shop for about 3 years while I was in college. And then I was thrust into the bona fide restaurant industry, where I have been for the last 12 years.
Wow.
And I have been serving and bartending since. Yeah.
Amazing. Can I just say, I hope you got free candy at that job.
Oh, yeah. No, fantastic. When I went to college, I actually was getting like physically ill because I was having like sugar withdrawals from the amount of saltwater taffy that I ingested while working there.
Beautiful.
So,
okay. There's also, I have another industry insider question of like, you know, there's always things where you're like, oh, if you've worked in this industry, you know to like never do X because you as an employee have seen behind the curtain. When we go into candy stores, is there anything that you're like, don't ever buy anything from this bin?
Not that. Oh, actually, you know what? Yes.
I knew it.
In our taffy bins, the sugar-free taffy would melt, disintegrate at an alarming rate because aspartame is not as stable as actual sugar. And so when you would go in to clean the bottoms of these taffy bins, the regular saltwater taffy would be good. It had a shelf life of a long time because it's basically just sugar.
6 billion years.
Yeah, exactly. But you would get to the bottom of the sugar-free taffy bin and it looked like someone took a blowtorch to it because it had just completely melted. And I believe, from what I remember, aspartame is one molecule away from weed killer. Yes, it is not good for you. And so seeing, you know, the actual in real time decomposition of fake sugar versus real sugar is the same why you should drink Mexican cola over American cola.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's hear some more about the service industry from the insider's perspective.
Yes.
So in Tatum's book, there's a a lot of the conversation is about empathy in the service industry and this idea that there are some people who are required to extend empathy and grace, i.e. the staff. And then there are others who are neither required nor even expected to extend empathy. And typically that leads to this dichotomy between workers who are overextending and customers, and then sometimes even managers or other staff members in different positions who are experiencing the empathy scarcity. So our first question to you is, what do you think would happen if the roles were reversed?
Yeah.
And like, what does the art of empathy mean to you? Or like, what would more empathy look like?
There is such a high expectation from service workers to provide an intense level of an experience to coddle the customer. And it comes from the development of this idea of the customer is always right, mm-hmm. which was not a thing for a very long time. I think it came about from the fast food industry. It was one fast food mogul that started implementing the customer is always right, which then completely shifted the entire power structure within the industry. And then also the fact that we are working for tips and tips make up the bulk of our income also puts us at a severe disadvantage, because if anybody has anything wrong whatsoever, they can punish us by actual like lording over economic power over us. And that ability is something that is so American versus in other countries where service industry people are paid a living wage, and in which case they are able to exercise whatever amount of, hey, you are in my space and we're not going to tolerate that. Or if you go to France, they think that you're a fucking idiot, and they have no problem telling you that. But that's because they don't have to grovel for their wages. And that idea of tips actually comes from, it's an acronym for to ensure prompt service, proper service. Mm-hmm. And, you know, tips preceded Yelp. Mm-hmm. Now you have Yelp reviews, mm-hmm. which gives a bunch of keyboard warriors a platform to completely disparage any minuscule discomfort that they have experienced while receiving services, to the detriment of someone's even livelihood, to their job. And it depends on really who you're working for and if that management is going to have your back or if they are going to bend over backwards for this customer. One of the restaurants that I worked at when I lived in Chicago, these people came in and wanted spaghetti, and we didn't have spaghetti on the menu. And it was the culture of this restaurant where my general manager went around the corner to Target and bought a box of pasta and brought it back to the restaurant and had the chefs cook pasta for this customer who came in voluntarily to our restaurant and looked at the menu and just decided that nothing there was for them. But they insisted on being there and thus required pasta.
That especially just... I'm thinking as you're responding, and I'm thinking about my experience, like having worked in the service industry and then transitioned to a different industry. I can't even imagine the amount of stress. And this is as a high school teacher, y'all. I cannot imagine the amount of stress of like how I would feel at work if I knew that any person could walk into my job and essentially garnish my wages if they didn't like my attitude or like my vibe that day, or if they were just having a crappy day. And like my literal income is dependent on how somebody feels about me and like how I made them feel mm-hmm. in like a quick, like, few minutes of interaction also.
And it's not even really dependent on like the show and dance that you put on, because you could be having a great day and you could put on the best, you know, server face or bartender face you have, and people just will goose egg you. They will zero out that tip line, or they will say the biggest red flag is when a customer says, "I appreciate you." Specifically you, if it's, "I thank you, I appreciate it," or "thank you so much," like maybe, but if you get an I appreciate you. Mm-mm. That is a, you know, that's about to be a 10 to 12% tip, because people think that if they're very nice to you as customers, that they don't have to tip you as well as they should, which is also that idea of tip you as well as they should is messed up in its own right. Because once again, we're not getting paid a living wage. In Chicago, it was service industry workers got $4.95 an hour, and your tips were supposed to bring you up to the minimum wage of, I think it was $8.25. And if your tips for that pay period did not bring you to an average of $8.25 an hour, your management, your ownership was supposed to compensate that amount. And you can guess how many times that happened, considering my owner was sued for $800,000 for back wages that were not paid or stolen. So,
and that's like someone having the ability to like step out and sue the owner of that restaurant. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because there are so many owners and there are so many systems within the service industry that are just not set up for support. And like no one's going to hold that accountable.
Yeah, no, absolutely not.
So in the details of retail, Tatum features a lot of different stories about customers, kind of like the ones that we're talking about right now. She wrote about this customer who we just kind of decided to call Bread Becky. And basically, it's this customer who's in a grocery store who's accused the bagger of smashing her bread. The lady got upset and balled up the bread and threw it at the cashier and asked if they like fresh bread. So we know that this is just like one of the million stories that happens in the service industry, from our own experiences, from our coworkers, friends, and from the very, you know, viral videos that go around on the internet, which again, don't even show, I feel like, a shadow of what actually happens in the service industry and like the frequency with which it happens. But it does, we do see a little bit of like how horrible customers can be. And so we want to know from you how these experiences impact conditions for workers in customer facing industries. And are customers the main point of the problem? Are they the main source, or is there something else? And like, what is that from your point of view?
Yeah, the bottom line issue is capitalism. Just the very fact that we have to work to pay rent, the very idea that we have rent, and the very idea that there's such scarcity in resources, and a lot of people are thrust into these jobs that aren't fulfilling and that are mainly necessary. Having to work a job because it is necessary and not engaging with something because you actually love it, and having to be so dependent on something, is really demanding. For me, and I can probably speak for a lot of people in the service industry when I say, yes, customers are the biggest pain. There are some issues behind the curtain, for sure. Maybe you don't get a shipment in and you are not going to have mint that day. And you're like, shit. Or the kitchen is like, hey, we are 86 this thing. We are out of this dish. We cannot serve it. That's a bummer. Maybe there's somebody who comes in who was really looking forward to having the schnitzel, and there's no schnitzel that day. And that's really like kind of a bummer. Yeah. But if anybody is going to make my day at my bar a bad day, it is a customer. Mm-hmm.
Rather than like a coworker, or because I feel like a lot of other people in a lot of other industries, it's like management and leadership in your job, or potentially relationships with colleagues, and maybe not even social relationships, even just the way that responsibilities are divvied out in workplaces can sometimes be like the primary kind of like source of frustration. And people come home and they're gripe about like, oh, like for my job, for instance, my customers are my students. They're never the problem. It's not them. Like they're never the ones. It's like something else that's going on that is that's like the thing that's causing me the headache. But so you would say like, yes, that is the big thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The benefit about working in a service industry job is there's usually a lot of people on your team, and you have a team as a whole, but the people that you're working with day to day is going to change.
Yeah.
Based off of people's schedules. So it's not like office culture where you have to go in and you're like seeing Diane every day. And Diane is chewing her gum so loudly at her desk every day. That's not really a thing. Yeah. Unfortunately, there are restaurants where your general management is just awful, or a couple of your coworkers are not allowed, but there are coworkers who just really suck. Mm-hmm. And you look at their schedule and you're like, damn it. I have to work with so-and-so today. Ugh, like they take a billion smoke breaks. Yeah. I'm going to have to, you know, check up on their tables because mm-hmm. they're nowhere to be found. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, they run the wrong food to the wrong table and they just cause a headache for everybody yeah. else. But for the most part, it is, yeah, I would say the customer.
That sucks. They have just way too much power in this system, in my opinion. But okay, so our next question for you, though, is how has the pandemic shifted main issues for worker? What are now like unfamiliar spaces that you either are or have had to navigate? And like, when did you notice that shift?
Having a job in a restaurant/bar during a aerosolized, transmissible, viral atmosphere mm-hmm. is so absurd that what my brain has had to go through to be able to show up to work every day is I don't even know the neurological firings and pathways that I've had to utilize or create. Because besides, I would say, the hospitals and dentistry, we are the only other industry where people are coming in and taking off their mask. You don't take off your mask
as a function yeah, of the thing. Yeah. Not mm-hmm, like mm-hmm, just people mm-hmm. out here.
Why? Right. Yeah. You don't take off sometimes. Your mask when you go to the grocery store. You don't take off your mask at school. You don't take your mask off in the office. Right. Exactly. Well, you know, these are not situations where you are supposed to take off your mask. Or you're able to work the whole day or be in the space the whole time without having to take off your mask. Versus in a restaurant, you're eating. And everybody went to working at home, which is, you know, fine. Mm-hmm. You know, the tech industry, they were working mm-hmm. at home, a lot of office jobs, they were working from home. And bars and restaurants were expected to work in some kind of function the whole time, which is, you know, we need our wages too. Mm-hmm. We need to kind of stay open. So it was this very delicate, like trying to make things work, but also trying to mitigate as much harm to ourselves as possible. And so when you have an entire workforce that's working from home and they're dealing with the mental stress of being at home all day and they have no more mental division between this is my home relaxing space and this is my workspace. And that I understand has been a very hard thing, but you can't be coming out for happy hour to decompress afterwards.
You really can't.
That completely defeats the purpose. Mm-mm. And the summer before there was even a whisper of a vaccine, and we didn't know how transmissible it was. We didn't know how it was on surfaces. We didn't know how it was, you know, it was this distance. It was this mm-hmm. limited capacity. It was this, it was that. And then international travel got banned. And so now we had people who needed to go on vacation, who wanted to go on vacation so bad, that were coming to visit the city because it was somewhere they had never been before. And I am trying to offer, you know, oh, I'm so glad you're here. Thank you for coming. Have a great rest of your day. Mm-hmm. Service to someone from Florida. Oh, we just got in from Florida.
You're nasty.
Oh, we just came in from air, like just these very big hotspots. And you're like, oh my God, why are you here? And then it's the little things of even people who were responsible and they come in and they wear their mask, and which is just absurd in itself. Even the people who were trying to be responsible and conscious about it, which how conscious can you really be in such an absurd situation like that, where You are not supposed to take off your mask until you are seated at your table. And if you need to get up for any reason, you need to put your mask on before you get up and walk. But you had people who had to go to the bathroom, and they would get up and they would start walking to the bathroom as they were pulling out their mask. And then they were putting their mask on as they were walking through the entire restaurant halfway to the bathroom before it actually got on their face. And being at the door, it was such a hazard, and for people working the door, of having to face people who, one, didn't believe the virus was a thing, two, were getting upset that they had to wear a mask. Very recently, a bartender here in one of the neighborhoods in Seattle was slashed in the face by a customer who was angry that he had to show proof of his vaccination and insisted that he was vaccinated, but didn't have proof of it. And this frontline worker, us as a workforce were basically abandoned by any actual enforcement of these mandates, quote unquote, that then became very quickly suggestions at the utter outrage by the general public who didn't want to comply. They went from mandates to suggestions.
Guidelines.
Yes. And this bartender was slashed across the face with a broken broom handle, had to get 35 stitches across her face, and now has a GoFundMe for like trying to cover the cost of that and trying to make sure that her face doesn't look fucked up for the rest of her life. And it's that kind of thing where, you know, when you think of people at Walmart whose jobs it has never been to be the mask police. Mm-hmm. And nobody wants to police other people, you know, nobody wants to be police because the police are not good.
They're not the good guys in the story.
Yes. And as soon as it became a personal responsibility for all of us to eradicate this virus by our own personal awareness and behaviors, it very quickly became aware that this thing was going to last forever. And here we are, 2 years into it, and
still dying.
Here we are.
Yeah. So in this conversation, we have spoken a lot and kind of made mention. We've like here and there touched on the idea of the differential experiences that the people have in the service industry. And specifically, everybody on this podcast right now is femme presenting. And I know, Marina, you have a project that is very, very focused on illuminating the experiences of the girls. So tell us a little bit about it.
Yes, very excited. A personal project.